Hello, you're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the Imagine It conference in Bologna. It's March 23rd, 2007. I've done this before, you can tell. With us is Tim Donaldson. Welcome.
Hello.
The first question is, how much time do you spend working a week?
Well, all week, really. I don't stop.
You don't sleep?
Well, obviously, I sleep for approximately a third of a day. But I don't view work as stopping and starting, because I'm always thinking about things. I'm, you know, generally obsessive and obsessed with the things I'm interested in. So, and a lot of the things I do which aren't maybe exactly defined as work could be called work, because they will eventually feed into other ideas. So I feel like I don't stop. But yeah, I mean, I play with my kids and I go out and things like that. So. And I watch the telly.
What's your current obsession?
The alphabet.
It has been for a while.
Has been for a long time, and will continue until I cease to exist.
I thought you were going to say till I cure it.
Well, that's my manifesto, is the alphabet, and I think people need to be made more aware of its power and its importance. I think in our community of graphic designers, I think people need to be made more aware of the power of writing. People don't often like their own writing, you know, and I think that shouldn't be the case. I think graphic designers, I passed that book round on the dinner the other night and everyone signed it, and most people were kind of a little bit, ooh, my writing's not so good. And I felt that was sad. I felt that they should have all been quite happy with their mark. And I see that as a problem. So I see that problem as my part of my obsession to try and rectify that problem by evangelizing about the power of writing and so on.
But how do you help?
And then in the wider world, I would think the issue is the alphabet, that people need to appreciate the power and importance of the alphabet and therefore good type. And then maybe we will get a better world. So when Jan showed that slide of the signs at the airport being so terrible, and the road signs, for instance, in Italy, so terrible, maybe if I can do something to just sort of raise awareness and make people make better signs eventually. I'm only talking a small effect I might have, but that's what I plan to do for the rest of my life to.
But for example, if you say you would like people to be proud of their own writing,
mm-hmm.
how do you see that you encourage that if you also create typefaces that are handwritten? I mean, if I start using your handwriting,
yeah.
Then how do I?
That's not that would not be my handwriting, though. This is the problem with handwriting type, and it's a bone of contention, I think. And I could appear to be quite a hypocrite here, because I have designed handwriting typefaces. But using a handwriting typeface to send me a letter is not the same as writing me a letter. Every letter is the same. It's basically clip art.
Okay. So you don't.
But it's due to change with OpenType. At least the possibility of change is there.
Yeah, well, maybe you'll have three versions of A that will be randomly substituted, you know, like the random font technology. Yeah, but it's still not handwriting. Mm. Never will be. And I see it as my mission. It sounds very grand, doesn't it? But I would like to just do whatever I can to bring writing, actual writing, you writing in your work, using your writing in your work, back in as much as possible, rather than just, what typeface shall I choose?
But that's a contradiction then, no?
If you have hope so. Yeah. I like contradictions.
If you have the typeface and you want them to use their writing, no?
Yeah, that is. I mean, that, like I said, I might appear to be a bit of a hypocrite here. So I'm supplying the world with handwriting typefaces, or at least I have done. And I might do again. And then I'm saying, but don't use them.
Yeah, exactly.
They'll still use them. People will still use them, even if I say don't use them.
Yeah.
But that is the way I feel. So I might do it, and maybe doing it, maybe producing a good handwriting typeface will stimulate somebody to look at their own handwriting and not use the typeface eventually. But really, that's what I think. Yeah, I think there was a great, fantastic story told by Peter Saville, where he approached Alan Fletcher, and Alan Fletcher began to use writing more and more in his work, to the expense of type. And Saville came up with a great line, which was, "Do you remember typefaces, Alan?" And Alan Fletcher turned around and came up with an even greater line and said, "Yes, they're a crutch for designers like you."
Very good.
Now, these are two, you know, two Englishmen who were good mates, and that was good banter. But I think there was a good point made there.
And so how did your obsession start with the alphabet?
I didn't like my own handwriting. When I got to about 14, I didn't like my writing. It was typically art schooly and fancy bits and pretentious, but I wanted it to look better. So I started to practice and read and observe and change it. And I did, and then I became a sign writer. So I thought, well, I could do this for a living. And so very naively and boldly, I got some business cards printed and said, "I'm a sign writer, employ me." And I went out and started to do sign writing. And then one thing led to another, and I eventually became a type designer, which is really just a sign writer with knobs on, I think. and here we are. And then I became a teacher. And now I'm a researcher. I'm being paid to look at the alphabet and the ways I want to see it develop and be used.
And who is your employer then?
The University of Lincoln.
And for example, in this conference we've seen other examples of sign writing. And how do you compare, basically in India, and how do you compare yourself with them? And at that time, is it, you think it's worlds apart, or?
I don't think I have compared myself to them. I don't actually know if I understand the question, but
in the way
it's worlds apart in that our world is now, everything is type. You walk down the high street now in our world, I know you live in Amsterdam, I don't know where you live, Lisa. But
in The Hague, yeah.
Right, so I imagine walking down your high street is probably quite similar to walking down my high street. Everything is a typeface, everything. So, whereas these things that we saw in India, let's say, it was all handmade. And I like that, because that's human. Now, type is good and works. I mean, if you want a particularly crisp, business-like image, maybe type is the way to go. But I don't always think that's the way. And people seem to be in England, for instance, people, if there is a handwritten sign, people seem to be apologetic about it because it's not been upgraded to type yet. And I think, no, don't. I think make it with your own hands.
Yeah, but don't you think that they're also trying to preserve some sort of heritage? Like there is that, let's keep it also to what it used to be, or not? I mean, England is quite obsessed with their past.
Yeah, but I think everybody is, aren't they? I think heritage is important and people should be obsessed with their past. But my point of view is that people should just be using their hands and writing more, rather than just relegating everything to being represented with type, which is clip art.
Okay.
So it's also like that because handwriting is always full of personality and emotion. And
absolutely.
And that's the difference between type and the handwriting.
Yeah. And handwriting type, well, it's an oxymoron, isn't it?
Handwriting, yeah, exactly. And we were looking at your project of your claim to be the largest type, handwritten type in the world. How did that project start? I mean, what was the incentive?
There's a calligrapher living in San Francisco called Kazuaki Tanahashi. And I read an article about 20 years ago, and he was talking about, and he was just making these huge line paintings with, and he'd make these huge brushes and would just drag them along the floor in a large space, like a chapel or outside. Good weather in San Francisco, not in England. And that would be the work. And I just thought that was fantastic. And I just do, you know, what you often do, what one often does. I thought, I want to do that. So I thought, how can I do what I do in that way? And the ATAIPAI conference in 1997, I submitted a proposal to do hamburger fonts, which is the word that all type designers know, but really big and handwritten, but with a huge brush. So I called it the world's biggest hamburger fonts.
Is it still the case? Is it still the world's biggest?
I don't know of anyone else that's done a bigger hamburger fonts than mine.
Did you make it into the Guinness Book of Records?
I didn't submit it.
But technically, what did you use? Like a broom or something?
The brush was three. You can see the brush on my website.
It looks like a broom.
TimothyDonaldson.com. But it looks like a broom, yeah. But it's actually 3 6-inch paint brushes clamped together into a bar and then attached to a handle. And the handle came away from the brush just as we were about to start. So if you see it on the video on the website, if you look closely, you'll see it's all tied together with string and tape. But that was specially made for the job because I had to calculate the size of the student union hall at Reading University, the length of the word hamburger, because I said I'll start with the H here and I will finish with the S there and it will all fit. So I had to sort of scale it down and use a 1-inch brush to practice. And so I knew the letter forms I was going to make before I made them, even though they were bigger than me. There's an interesting theory there that the writing doesn't actually take place. The writing actually takes place in your head. Because for instance, if you're doing like the H, when I start the H at the top of the ascender, I can't see the baseline. It's behind me.
Yeah.
So I...
But did you practice before you did
this?
In that...
But at
that
24th scale.
Oh, okay.
So the brush was 2 feet wide. The chisel edge brush was 2 feet wide. I practiced with a 1-inch brush in the hotel room.
Right,
but still,
exactly.
How hard is it to translate that movement of like a 1-inch brush to that size of the big one?
It all happens very quickly. The whole thing, the hamburger, took about 3 minutes. It's huge, but it took only three minutes to do. It took about 2 hours to set up, 3 minutes to do. But the only way you can do it is because you know what it's going to look like in your head already. So, and I'd never done it before. I practiced on the lawn at home with white paint. It was the biggest space I had. But it is possible. And my theory, if that's what it is that the writing takes place in the mind. It's writing in the mind's eye. So I knew what it was going to look like before I did it, even though even the individual letters were bigger than my own body.
But it is sort of, for example, then you could do the same thing without looking, no? I mean, because if it happens in the mind, then you can do it...
Yeah. It is, I suppose, like when because you can close your eyes and write your signature, can't you? Because it's in your muscle memory.
Yeah, that's true. And because it's more of a physical experience, I mean, it's the movement more than the... Yeah, you can't see what you're doing in a way.
No.
And you have not done that since?
I did it again at the ATAIPAI conference in Prague in 2004.
Yeah.
And that was, the space was smaller, so we did Praha fonts.
Okay, yeah, cutting them down.
Yeah, and I'd love to do it again, so if anybody's listening that thinks this is a nice idea.
Weddings, funerals, bar mitzvahs.
Whatever, yeah.
This is Type Radio. Oh, we are about what you want. This is Type Radio. Oh, we are about what you want.
Opening of an envelope.
Yeah.